Do you believe that everybody has a poem that is central to the meaning of their life?
I actually believe our lives are poems, and that we don't really know the meaning of our poem until the last line. It comes out in many forms. There are many different ways to express that poem. Everyone has it in them to be a poet, to write poetry. And the reason I believe that is that we all dream. The way dreams are constructed are very much the way poems are constructed. It involves a lot of the same things, metaphor, simile, you know, jump cuts, all that kind of thing. And so I have this sense that our ability to write poems actually originates in our dreaming ability. Whether or not we remember our dreams doesn't matter. We all dream every night.
Your poems seem like music. You'd hate to go through life without rhythm and connection to a greater force. What do you do in the workshops to help people discover their poem? Is it through dream work?
It's one place we can go, one approach we can make. The main thing I think is that I believe really that any poem worth its salt arises from the unconscious, ultimately. The poems of my own that I am the most interested in are the ones that surprise me. After I've written it, I learn something that I didn't know before. So when I do a workshop, I try to come at it from a number of different angles, and one of them being ways that we can tap those unconscious articulations that want to get out there. And I also come from position of craft as well, and how we can use craft to help shape the poem and also to tap into the unconscious.
Well, tell us a little bit about this collection. Tell me first about the title.
Her Infinite. What I have in mind with that title is something along the lines of the poet William Blake's declaration that everything that lives is holy. So what I meant was to evoke the earth, or Gaia, and the archetypal divine feminine, which is love and mystery. The poems themselves are a mix of poems that these days people are referring to as poems of social engagement. In this particular book, it means poems concerned both with the experience of environmental degradation and what activists are doing in response to address those issues. So it's full of both love poems that are veined with the erotic, and then some of the poems are a mix of both. I think of Maxine Kuhman, who says that all poems are elegy, and then there's another poet, Christine Hemp, who says that all poems are love poems. So the book is a mix of both, and the title, Her Infinite, is really meant to suggest or evoke that sense that even though things are kind of a mess, you know, and there are these terrible things going on, including environmental degradation and other forms of social and environmental injustice, there's also this overriding presence, this overriding Her Infinite that holds us. That's really the perspective that the book is meant to invoke.
Harvard Review describes your collection as refusing the fatalistic disharmony between humans and nature, recovering us back to our spiritual significance. Your themes are easy to relate to. You say the poems engage a healing with the poet as note-taker and celebrant. Say more about how we might connect with your poems personally.
That's really up to each reader. I don't really have a formula or anything like that. I've noticed that it's like with anything, a poem is either going to strike somebody or it's not. One thing I can say is that the poems, a lot of them tend toward what they call experimental, and what I think of is just visual formatting. To be honest, I originally was very interested in being a visual artist. That was where my inclination is, and I think that with time, that visual desire has made its way into the poems. So a lot of the poems are very visual. You know, there's one called Life Stories and Other Possible Endings, for example, that's in the shape of a bristlecone pine tree. And then there are others like that.
What inspired you to put this collection together?
Well, initially, there was a feed poem called Cochiti Lake, 1989. That arose in 2007 at a crisis moment when I was trying to understand how I had arrived in the circumstances in which I found myself at that time. I was dealing with a chronic illness, which I'm completely free of now. I was deeply involved in environmental activism, and my husband, who's an abstract expressionist painter, was also involved in that with me. And meanwhile, the whole issue of nuclear power was coming back around for me from my college days when I had been involved in the effort to close Rocky Flats. Only now, it was in relation to issues involving Los Alamos National Laboratory. I needed a way to hold all of that together. and it happened in the making of that poem. After that, it was really as though the poem served as a sort of magnet for other poems that were somehow in relationship to that topic. Some of them had been written as much as 15 years before, and then others were written, you know, maybe as late as 2 years ago.
May we have the beginning of Cochiti Lake as a sample?
I'll just read the first half and then stop, because it is a long poem, and most of my poems do tend to be longer poems. Cochiti Lake, 1989. Plank patterned, nail headed. The waves were silvery. There was a wind. It was my idea to go there. It was my idea. We were liquid, which is to say, we were not quite gelled. It was at Cochiti, where the Rio Grande pools for a while before spilling recklessly over the dam. Night came. We lay down in our separate sleeping bags. Why is this important to you? We lay down. We saw a star falling in slow motion in an arch, a small white dot descending, visible only in the moment it fell. A flare. You told me your wish, a risk. I remember the fishermen checking their traps, oaring out to the center of the lake, entering the realm of its iris, their silhouettes, the metal clanging, the dock roughing us up, the dock knocked about by the waves by the wind, the smear of thinnish clouds filtering moon, the feel of your hand resting lightly on the small of my back. In the morning, I stripped down to swim. Water is my medium. I did flip turns without a wall and back bends. I invited you in. That's when it began, when I invited you. We didn't know the word aquifer. We didn't know the phrase perched water zone. We didn't know the meaning of ephemeral stream, its relation to precipitation or the melting of snow. We didn't know about impairment, the available options, the list, where we could no longer swim, where and what we could no longer drink. We didn't know about fluctuating temperature or vectors for pathogens. We didn't know about turbidity, about incident light, and what it might mean to be scattered or absorbed in sediments, what it might mean to become a suspended solid, to be alluvial, to be eroded, transported, and deposited by a stream onto a solid rock shelf. I thought primary contact was what happened between us that night. The feel of your hands, the small of my back.
That's lovely. Thank you so much for that first part. When is your next workshop?
I'm going to be offering a workshop a couple of days, actually after the reading, also at Boulder Bookstore on Thursday morning at 10 o'clock in the upstairs room.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us at KGNU.
Thank you, Nikki.